This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
The long COVID effects on the music industry. I think it's enough. We have enough time. Now, enough time has passed for us to be able to reflect upon, think about just how much the pandemic has affected the music we listen to, how we listen to it, the interactions of the music industry, how artists have been affected, how labels have been affected. So how industry professionals being affected, because as you know, hello, I am Derek G, as I wave if you're watching this in video form. I like to think about music. I like to listen to music first and foremost, but I like to think about music and just how we interact with it as individuals, as consumers, as people that like inspiration, people that are influenced by music throughout our whole lives. And just how much different things impact that. For example, you know, coming out of World War II, where music changed tremendously. You know, civil rights movements changed music tremendously. Technological advancements obviously have continued to alter music dramatically, from recording capabilities to drum machines to everything in between. And I do think that COVID-19, we are still experiencing the impacts of, and we won't fully know the impacts of for a while to come. But I think I'm starting to see all the patterns, and that's what I want to talk about today. If you're new to the podcast, I am Derek G, and I think I talk about music all the time on a variety of different places. If you stick around to the end, there will be an appendix where I'll fill you in on the live event I did recently. Love to talk about that. Love to talk about the people that I met there. Love to fill you in on what I learned about it. I want to talk about the process and journey of whatever I've been on with this podcast as well. So that's at the end of the pod. You can tell that I've woken up with a tremendous amount of energy. So I came in hot. So now we can settle down a little bit. The chapters for today in the long COVID effects on the music industry. My little essay, my little thesis goes as follows. Lost music / stuck in the past. Touring, music consumption, momentum killer, tech. Yeah, that's it. Those are the chapters that we will go by for this episode. And do I need to preface anything else? I think that when we were in COVID times and lockdown times, I think we all couldn't imagine going back to a world that had any sort of normalcy to it. I remember walking past those kind of hot pot places, restaurants where you kind of grab your ingredients and you put them in the bowl, and, you know, or like some sort of like bain-marie setup or some sort of buffet setup. And I thought, well, those businesses are never coming back, because those are germs, and we've all learned a thing or two about germs. Lo and behold, they're all back. You look at festivals and all the people crammed together, you're like, ha, look at all that, close proximity sharing of, you know, ventilation. That's not going to happen again. Obviously, it's gone back to normal real quick. What is to normal? Back to normal. Because I think that as I reflect on things, I think things have changed a lot. Now, was that all to do with the pandemic? No. I think especially when I talk about technology, I think that it might have happened regardless, but I think that it was like the accelerant to a lot of the change that we're seeing in the music industry. So let's start with lost music. Frank Ocean, the most obvious one. Let's start there. There was a leak of a video of his that came out recently, a music video that was shot prior to the pandemic, which featured Rosalia, which featured, I don't even know who's in the video, tons of celebrities. I want to say Slow Tie. I maybe want to say Steve Lacy. I could be wrong. A bunch of different artists, models, cool people. That was shot that was made, that never came out. It was rumored, maybe, and I'm not saying this is true, that the director leaked it or there was some complications with payments, so someone leaked it. It's not being formally acknowledged, but obviously there's Frank Ocean and Rosalia in a video. It was made. And makes me think about how there are a lot of artists that were planning to put out music that didn't. Just straight up didn't. And Frank Ocean, for example, his brother died, so that would have affected things too. But I think there were people on a rollout campaign that never got to fulfill that and then canned it. And so I guarantee you there is so much music that was made that didn't come out because it probably reflected a different time and was reflecting a different sort of momentum of the artist. And then they decided, no, this isn't right. When should we drop it? When should we drop it? When should we drop it? Okay, I'm tired of this music. I'm not dropping it at all. And that's kind of crazy to me that there's this whole, you know, year or two worth of music that never comes out. I think that the music that is lost, we will not know the full extent of it. And maybe some artists will put it out as its own narrative. But I think it's almost like it was such a microcosm time where artists actually put out music that reflected the times. Say, for example, Charlie XCX put out How I'm Feeling Now. Who else did? Taylor Swift put out Folklore, very like introverted, isolated albums. I think the people that saw the opportunity in reflecting the time they're in now is great. And that is the positive effect in opposition to the lost music, that some people went like, you know, I want to reflect what I'm experiencing now. And releasing music that you're going to release in 2020 in a few years to say this was meant to come out in 2020, maybe that narrative is kind of stale and kind of lame. The second part of this long COVID chapter is music that's stuck in the past. Now, I've been thinking about it for a long time and haven't made a video about it because I don't think it's that interesting of a point to make in short form, is that music is not a reflection of our time more than it is a reflection of our recent past. Because obviously, music, 95% of the music that's put out has been recorded a long time ago when the artist was in a different headspace. They recorded that and then maybe worked on it, got some more writers on it, maybe shelved it, maybe didn't like it, maybe came back to it, and then mixed and mastered it, delivered it, and then marketed it or set it part of a plan. And any music that we love that comes out today, the day that you're listening to this podcast, has been in the works for, you know, anywhere from 6 months to 5 years. And that kind of messes with my head a little bit when you think about music history and you think about like, oh, this album was really a representation of 1979. It's like, well, was it? I think in some cases, especially in the 60s up until, you know, maybe the late 70s, early 80s, maybe music was reflective of that time because it was a lot more immediate and there was less, lots more was recorded in the room. But I think that the prime example of it is this, and I will not reveal my sources, but Kendrick Lamar's recent album, which is Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, came out last year, 2022. A friend of mine who is friends with one of the people that worked on the album said that some of the music that is on that record was recorded in 2018. And they were like wondering if it would ever come out. So to think about this album 4 years later coming out and being like this, you know, that album was not necessarily an album about now as much as it is about identity and about gender and about lots of other political things that aren't about 2022. It is kind of crazy to think that we're like listening to music that's quite old. And I think that a lot of artists held on to their music from being released in 2020 and 2021 because they're like, things are changing. I need to promote my tour. I need to go on tour. Why would I put out music and then not capitalize off it? I'm not putting it out. And so therefore, the albums that ended up rolling out in 2022 and 23 might be from a long, long, long time ago. And so now either we have like lost music, we have old music, we might even have a back catalog of music that is coming, still to come out, that is kind of reflective of a different time. Because if you think about the time right now, a lot of economic uncertainty, growing political uncertainty in the US, you know, there's obviously different conversations. There was at some point there was a discussion about China, always is, but you know, so when will music catch up to where we are right now? 2027, who knows? So that's something that I think is less tangible, because we don't see the lost music. We don't know that we're stuck in the past because it's new music to us, but it's like what Kendrick was probably expressing in 2018. It's very different to people like thinking about the rental crisis or interest rates or the economic downturn of 2023 when something was recorded in 2018. Something to think about. Next category, next chapter is the long COVID effects of touring. I think about this one a lot. This is a big point for me. I think that live music has been heavily affected by COVID-19 because you have two levels of music. One, you have all of the major artists that are held back their music from 2020, 2021, releasing in 2022 and going on world tours, whereby you have the biggest artists doing their world tours at the same time. I know people in the touring industry saying it is insane. It's like you can't predict anything. It's like every venue is booked up to the hills and gills, booked up to the gills. And everyone's trying to do it at the same time, right? And whilst that is great, I think that there is an economic driver, which means that like if I want to see Billie Eilish for $175, for example, that's a big chunk of money. And I've been stuck inside and I want to see my favorite artists. And so I'll pay that money. But then I have less money for the small to medium artists. So my theory is that the small to medium sized artist is suffering, because there's less money to go around, because the big ticket items, the big ticket artists are coming through and scooping all that up for their stadium shows. And that ultimately has moved, you know, put the thumb on the scale for major artists to really lean into this. And the developing a local scene of cities around the world may be suffering. I think they're suffering because you've only got so much money to dish out. And say, for example, I didn't do any of this because I don't go to many gigs right now at my point in life with a young kid. But would I rather see Tyler, the Creator, on his delayed world tour, or for $150, or would I want to see a buzzing band for $15, $20 times 10 and not know if I'm going to enjoy my show, not know if I like them, be in small rooms, not see a same type of spectacular show, sacrifice more of my time? People may or may not be going out less. So I feel like it's like, you know, the whales and the minnows. I feel like it's kind of a thing where the whales have come along and just sucked up everything else and the attention too. I don't have no evidence to this besides my own observation. And my own observation is that global world tours from massive artists are creating so much mind share, and that the small to medium kind of instinctual desire to see those acts is waning or has waned. And will I think that 2-3 year period is going to take a little time to come back, because I think that when I met some people, I met an artist that was just turned 18 and during the pandemic, and they were making this like club music. And I was like, oh, amazing. And they're like, yeah, I've never been to a club. I don't know what it's like. This is what I imagine it to be like. Wild. So there's a young people that have existed in a time where they've imagined a certain thing and they're now in the world, are trying to experience things that they've kind of had a delayed ability to experience, which is kind of crazy to me. So yeah, whales and minnows of touring, I think is a, I think we won't see the impact of that for years, but I think that there will be this like gap, which I think is existing right now, where major big artists are succeeding and small artists are kind of sputtering along, struggling to get to that next level because there's not enough airtime because everyone's on tour right now. Next category, music consumption. How the long COVID effects of music consumption. This is a multi-stop point. First one, K-pop infiltration. The adoption of K-pop in the West. I think that the K-pop, the design of K-pop and the death laser of K-pop and building the infrastructure around it brought itself somewhat luckily to a point where the pandemic, the laser was focused and really, really took advantage of that, because I know quite a few people personally and on my Discord, go join the Discord, that say that they've been a fan of K-pop since 2020. What were we all doing in 2020? We're online all the time. We had nothing to do. So let's be obsessed about a whole new world, a universe of things that we hadn't been into before. So many people I know have learned about it since then. I started learning about it in 2019 because of the job I've talked about this in the previous episode that I had. So I wasn't far behind. So I kind of get it in a sense. And what the K-pop machine was able to do is, like, I think that major labels in the West were like, oh, hold everything back. The tour, like, let's not put things out. I feel like K-pop did that for a little bit and then like, okay, back to business, because we have a way that we do business. We have a way that we release stuff and we're not waiting around for that. And so what was the momentum behind new music in 2020 and 21 was K-pop, I think, where BTS really capitalized on it. Is this all pre-planned? Like, oh, it's the pandemic and we've all capitalized. No, I don't think so. But I think that's a timing thing. BTS really capitalized on it. The Blackpink documentary came out during that time as well. There was also a K-pop documentary on YouTube that came out at the same time. It all kind of coalesced. And the translators and the artists seem to come out at that right point and has led to this point where in 2023, a lot more people are aware, savvy, and well-versed in the concept of K-pop. And I think that it is no accident. And the drivers around, because we were online and because K-pop is such a content creation machine, you have incredible music videos, you have incredible social content, you have dancing, you have behind the scenes. It's designed for an online audience to feel a part of that world. So K-pop is the success of K-pop in the West. There is a definite long COVID effect of that. The second one is a lot more personal to me, which is hi-fi and indoors people. That I think that vinyl collection, record collection, and the building of hi-fi and systems is something where people are enjoying being at home more. People are enjoying listening to music at home more. People were also online and being very attracted by my stuff because they're like, I'm at home more. And I would like to have this hobby and listen to music. And you seem like a person that can point me in the right direction. I think that the long COVID effect of listening is that people want to improve their personal listening setup and almost like take the music fandom indoors. So collecting records, the kind of record collecting community, which I don't count myself part of. I don't go to Record Store Day. I don't pay attention Record Store Day. Or I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. Is like collecting records almost as like you would collect Hot Wheels or you would collect Pokemon cards, where it's like it's less about you're a fan of the music, full stop. But then you're also like, how do I keep the record in pristine condition? How do I keep the sleeve in pristine condition? How do I display it? How do I organize it? How do I color code it? What is the most exclusive pressing I can get, rather than I just want to buy it and listen to it? It's the kind of record collecting community has definitely evolved as well. I think music consumption in a agoraphobic way, like I said, has kind of affected things with regards to touring, but it's also affected people's expectations of festivals and live shows. I will use myself as the reference to not just be like Derek is just spouting his theories and speaking directly to you as if he knows things and he's just making things up. Because to a certain extent, I'm making educated, informed guesses. But take K-pop, for example. I hadn't been to a K-pop concert. I was aware of it. I'd learned about it, like I said. And the only experience of K-pop concerts I had was online, on TikTok, on YouTube primarily. And I finally went to one with my sister. I went to see Twice in April. And I went and I knew what to expect in terms of a variety show type, not variety show, but like, you know, there's talking breaks, there's like solo performances, there's dance performances. I expected that. And I remember seeing that on TikTok when people were talking about, like, people were surprised by it because like, it's not 1 hour of hardcore show. It's like stopping and talking to the audience and all that sort of stuff. So I was kind of educated in that sense online, what to expect. But going there, I had in my head what a K-pop concert would be. And then arriving there, I was like, I've only imagined and experienced K-pop concerts in my head and online. And this is kind of blowing my mind because I'm seeing all the bodies, right? All the shapes and sizes out for a good time. I'm like, whoa, look at all these people that I thought were kind of like me, but are definitely not like me. All walks of life. How people interact or not interact with the concert, how lively or not lively they were. And it wasn't what I expected out of a concert experience. I thought the show was great. There was no faults to the show, but the kind of audience experience, seeing the audience in real life of what I imagined the audience would be, kind of blew my mind. And I hear that a lot about, I was at a gig recently and sound engineer said to me, yeah, I've noticed that the younger people have a different expectation around encores because the band had planned an encore, but the band had said, thanks, this is our last two songs, and then did this two songs. They said, thanks a lot. And then they went off stage and the people were like, cool, I'm going home. And the place started to empty almost immediately until thankfully someone in the crowd was like, one more song. And people were like, oh, okay, one more song. And then they came out because they're always going to come back out. Maybe that's one person's observation. But I tend to trust someone that's like an engineer that sees a lot of gigs. They're like, no, yeah, people don't really understand encores. And so they just have this expectation. I see this show, then I go home. It was so awkward to see it just completely emptying out. I remember seeing Joji at a festival not long ago, and he did this like gag, multiple gags of like, this is the last song, this is the last song. I think in the artist's head, because he had this massive song in 2020, A Glimpse of Us, 2021. I think the gag for him is like, everyone knows I'm going to play Glimpse of Us at the very end, so I'm just going to pretend to keep him off stage. But for people like me who kind of forgot his back catalog and many others, we're like, oh, they just finished. All right. On to the next. People leaving, you know, everywhere just kind of go, all right, I'm out. And then him coming back and being like, people have to rush back in. So I think the people's expectations around festivals, that agoraphobia around like being like afraid of going out, has really affected our expectations around live music, I think.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chapter 4 is the momentum killer. This one hurts my heart, but then there's a part of it that also excites me. Safe to say, and I'm confident about this one, COVID-19 killed a lot of bands and artists who had momentum, who had this narrative. These are the people that are the new ones to watch. These are the ones that you need to see next year. These are the ones that are going to blow up. 2018, 2019, maybe they're growing on the global stage, and they're buzzing, and they'll probably plan to tour in your city. And then everything gets shut down from, 18 months? A year to 18 months? Time's gone so quickly. I feel like I've almost forgotten the experience of COVID. But yeah, man, like that. I know artists that were absolutely popping off and everyone's talking about them. And now everyone, like, that you don't hear from them anymore, because I think that they got completely steamrolled by not being able to tour, not being able to put themselves in front of people, and not being very good at like making content to capitalize on that stuff. And that's not their fault. And I think that many people who have capitalized are the people that were able to take their buzz online. How many people can do that? Not many. So I think it's very sad that there is a hole. I would not love to see, because I think it'd be very sad. I would love to see a list of groups that were basically killed by COVID. The long COVID effects of COVID have been that there's probably thousands of artists that their careers were killed. Because how do you get that momentum back? You had articles. Everyone wanted to book you. Everyone wanted to have an early look in. And now they're like, oh, I forgot about you. Oh, this feels old. That's a bummer. I think that when I say momentum killer, or maybe killer, but like a negative turning to a positive, is that thousands of music industry professionals got laid off due to lack of touring, lack of sales, lack of releases, rafter different things. I know a bunch of people that have been laid off. That was obviously terrible. And then there's like a almost like a knowledge gap, because you have to rehire all these people or rehire new people to train them to the jobs that they were fired, because for an 8-month period, they needed to cut that person, and then they need to bring someone back, and you've got to train them for probably 8 months to get them to a speed where they were similar in efficacy. What I think is a positive side of that is that the like you cut back on a plant during the winter season, I think that a lot of these people that were cut back and cut out actually were given the opportunity to start new businesses and start their own journey, and therefore contribute as an individual that they might not have been able to contribute in their 9-to-5. So I think that in many ways, I think there's a lot of entrepreneurialism and a lot of new business that was born out of the retrenching of people in the music industry. But I think I'm sure a lot of people would completely move to a different industry as well. I remember Eclair Fifi, a DJ, was like, see you suckers. She didn't say it was quite a brutal Instagram. She's like, I can't DJ right now. I need to make some money. I'm not posting on here. I'm getting a job and I will be back when I'm back. And I was like, I love that honesty, because it's true. Like, if you're a DJ, hey, could you go fund me because I can't DJ anymore? Eclair Fifi, who's Scottish, is probably like, I say he's Scottish, but it feels very Scottish, very like strong-willed. It's just like, I'm out. I've got to do what I got to do. And yeah, I think that they're born out of it, a lot of entrepreneurialism, but a lot of, you know, mental health effects of people that were fired or lost touring and all that sort of stuff as well. So we will not know the long COVID successes of that until for 10 years, I'd say. Like, some people are succeeding now, but I think these people are building the beginnings of their agency, you know, management company, artist career that started in 2020, 2021 that we'll see thrive in 2027 and et cetera. The last long COVID effect is in tech. Technology, or broad reaching. And when I say technology, I say basically the internet and the internet consumption and sharing and experience of music. So multifaceted, this one as well. Death of the online concert is my first point. I think that 2020, 2021, when everyone's indoors, the recording industry was like, we need to make money. Everyone's at home. We all sat around waiting for things to change. It's not happening. So let's make money. Let's provide some experience to the audience. So we all saw the at-home concerts and or like big stadium shows, but like from the comfort of your own home. And I firmly believe that it was almost like stress tested to the point where it's like dead, where I think we all saw one or two, maybe for free, maybe we paid for it. You know, you name it, Billie Eilish to 88 Rising to Nick Cave did online concerts. Two out of three of those were paid. And I think people thought, well, this is the future. Pay $20, see Billie Eilish. But I think that fairly quickly people realized this is not the future. I don't want to watch this. I want to see it in person. But I don't want to see a live event of someone in a studio singing to nobody. You know, the best version of a live concert that I've seen was Coachella this year, where you're actually watching the festival with people and they're interacting with the crowd and they're getting sweaty and things go wrong and they bring out a feature and someone, a crowd goes crazy and you kind of go crazy. And but like, just say, I didn't watch it, but just say Billie Eilish brings out Taylor Swift, like it's like everyone, Taylor Swift. Intentional silence, obviously. It's like, okay, anyway, so hey Taylor, how are you going? Like it almost becomes like a vlog or a Zoom call. So I think that the industry really put focus its lasers on it, but I don't think that there is a place for it as much as people thought it was the future economy of music live experiences. I don't think that exists. I think, again, K-pop has figured out live experiences of artists in a really horrible, almost sweatshop way, which is like those private one-on-one calls where I don't know how much you pay. You might even pay hundreds of dollars to basically have like a FaceTime with your idol for 2 minutes. And you're basically just like talking nervously. That is a better, is it a better moneymaker? It's a better experience for the fan. I don't know if it's a better moneymaker. Maybe it's a minute call and they do like, they do just an hour worth of these calls. Horrendous for the artist, but you know, at least you're connecting with an artist in a real way and not like watching Billie Eilish talk to an empty auditorium. Production via Zoom. So this is a new point that I just added in before I started recording this. Because no one could go and meet in studios, because no one could spread their, I forget what they call it now, the vapors, you know, the aerosols, whatever, the breath in the same room as other people during COVID. A lot of people, as we do with business these days, move to Zoom, move to Google Meet. No one moved to Microsoft Teams. No, I'm kidding. And started producing music that way. Novel for many instances at the outset because, well, you know, wow, I can be in a session with someone in Rio as well as in Brooklyn at the same time. And I think that during that time, it was a great solution to keep making music. The old man in me will say that I fear that that is the new normal. And I kind of dream of a simpler time where people got together into a studio and the alchemy and the energy in the room created a hit because people were just vibing off each other. Now, how many songs have I heard that, like, how many songs that I love in the last 10 years have been made in a room like that? Probably like 5%, like, because any Drake song that I like, any, you know, Daft Punk song that I like was probably made by someone making a bit of it and then sending it to someone else and then sending it to someone else. But then I think about, because I was watching a documentary the other day where it had like artists in a room writing a song together. I'm like, man, that is such a, like, I feel like that's such a much more of a rarer thing these days to have that kind of like, let's everyone get in a room. And like the combination of all these individuals leads to this special moment where a once in a lifetime song is made and recorded. And I don't think, best case scenario, it doesn't matter. Best case scenario. Worst case scenario, music sounds almost a bit compartmentalized and a bit like just separated by ideas, by distance, by energy. And it all just like living in these little email attachments or Zoom calls where they're like, I can't really hear you play guitar right now, but try playing this. And then they play it and they're like, it sounds kind of cool. Like, yeah, send me the stems when you're finished with it. You know, that's the worst case scenario. The next big one is TikTok in terms of tech, in terms of the long COVID effect that tech has had on music. It's too much to talk about with TikTok. So let me just rattle out a bunch of different ones. So TikTok obviously rose so quickly during the pandemic because everyone was on their phones and everyone's like, what's this new thing? I kind of broke out during the pandemic. So I'm a product of that as well. I think that TikTok and vertical video and every subsequent app, Instagram, YouTube, copying it, was a direct response to TikTok, not only creating creators like me who harness the ability to storytell around music, hi-fi, whatever I do, but then also capture a global conversation around music, buzz, live shows, and be the new Twitter in a sense that it was able to, if there is a controversy around Taylor Swift and Maddie Healy, you can watch one video and then it will serve you 100 and you'll be in this global conversation or argument about whether Taylor Swift should date Maddie Healy. Or I remember Splendor in the Grass, a festival in Australia, happened last year and it was rained out and I was on TikTok and within an hour I was seeing all of the drama that unfolded because it was cancelled for that day, people covered in mud. And that's what Twitter was, but it's in text form and in image form. And now I'm like scrolling through and I'm seeing everyone sharing almost in real time what's going on. And I'm like, this is wild that I'm experiencing the world in this way. And I think that TikTok was like designed to capitalize on that boredom and that sharing and that instant algorithmic focused conversation push, that not only is the new Twitter for music, but is able to like shove people into these like hyper niches of conversation and globalize that and make people feel very comfortable in communities that they wouldn't have been part of, because how their algorithm works is it shoves you down further into these little niches and you feel more in tune with what you're interested in quicker. And every company has copied this to a lesser extent, to not as much success. I think that TikTok has also created new commentators. like myself, like many others that have cropped up. Patrick Hicks, my friend, has as do I, we have a day job, and then suddenly we're talking about music, and everyone's like, "Hey, Patrick Hicks, you're great. You're talking about music." And he's like, "Yeah, I didn't talk about music in public until now. I just did a corporate job." And so these new commentators coming out at the same time, I think that also, should I jump to it now? This was my last point after TikTok, but I'll just jump into it now. The acceleration of music journalism dying, Genius, Complex News, MTV News, is a result, is a long COVID effect because of technology and the competing space of all of those places that I just mentioned competing for eyeballs. The revenue not being the same because they're all doing similar things. If Drake drops an album and then Genius and Complex and BuzzFeed all talk about it and MTV all talk about it, did you know Drake just dropped it? They're all doing the same thing and they're all being served to the same audience. You're probably like, none of them are going to get any views, because at least someone like me, I'm not talking about that because other people are talking about it. I'll talk about, Bolivian soul music. And people are like, "Oh, I haven't heard this before." And no, that's not coming out of a Complex News, is it? So I think that it accelerated the death of music journalism because there's a democratization of these platforms. There's an acceleration of these platforms being consumed during the pandemic. And then there's these new voices like myself who, take me for instance, was never in front of the camera, always collected thought and talked about music and had been basically piloting things on my radio show that no one listened to for many years, to the point where there's a camera in front of me and now I'm talking and now there's an audience around what I do. And that wouldn't have happened without TikTok, that wouldn't have happened without me working from home, that wouldn't have happened without me having the time to do it at home. Long COVID effects is Derek G, So it's my experience is a good representation of how TikTok and the media landscape has changed. And yeah, lots of those, like I said, those publications have culled a lot of staff or have completely culled that part of their business. Touring and TikTok is really interesting. I think that a lot of artists and labels have recognized that your visuals, what you do at a concert, how you change that concert is social media content. And that, like I was talking about TikTok and being the instant video Twitter, it's promotion for your tour around the world. So I don't think they did this on purpose. I cynically thought that Twice kicked off their world tour in Australia because it's a small market where you can trial things and you can also get lobbyists to make content for you to help promote it to the other Twice people around the world, fans around the world, so that when you announce there, they've been like, "I've seen these crazy things on TikTok from the Australian Twice show. I want to go." Isn't that smart if they did that? I would love to think they did that from a strategic point of view. I doubt it. But I think that is not out of the realms that, so what you would do is like do all this crazy stuff that people haven't seen before. So then they record it and they go, "Oh my gosh, Momo's doing a pole dance. She's never done that before." People are like, "What? She's doing a pole dance? I want to see that." And then it travels from there. And then what I've noticed is like people like Taylor Swift or Harry Styles, they change up lyrics. They change up track lists, they drop different things during the show. Now, back in the day, artists would just play the same show every single night because there was no one recording it and broadcasting it, right? And no one would know that you repeated it. If I played, a dubstep version of Land Down Under from Men at Work, people would talk about it. Maybe people will talk about it and tell their friends about it, but it's not going to extend beyond your, the city that you played in. Now, you can film that and a million people can see that within an hour. And then people are like, "I want to see that dubstep version of Men Down Under." in my city. And then when you get there, they might do that and they might do something else. And then that promotes for the South American tour. So I think that labels, artists, touring companies are getting a lot smarter about the fact that if you make social media content within your concert, I know it sounds sad to say, but it's true. You're promoting yourself for the next thing. T-shirt cannons, you know, dance breaks, bringing out someone crazy onto the stage. All there for the taking. Last one is a bit woolly. I'm not even sure if this is true, but I think that this was happening before TikTok, but I think it accelerated, which is the UKification of music. Garage, jungle, people like Fred Again, boiler roomification of the club, which is, you know, people filming their DJ sets there and putting them online. People filming some transitions, putting that online. I think that the Skrillex Fortet, Fred Again phenomenon that of Coachella, people were like, what is this? Like, why is it so sloppy? Why are they like mixing up all these genres? What is this wheel up? I've seen a lot of this. I'm not saying that you don't know about this. You probably do if you're listening to this, but a lot of people don't know what those things are. And they're like, why are they wheeling back a song and then playing it again, then wheeling it back? But I feel like what has been around in the UK for a long time in club culture has made it to America finally. And I think it has only been accelerated through TikTok and social media and like these new sounds. I have this theory that it's not an underground theory. It's like the Georgia Smith's song with Predator, I forget the name of it, was really where the new garage Pink Panther-esque sound came from. And everyone doing that sort of UK sound now. Anyway, I digress. I think that people are looking for new sounds and new things. And I think that boiler room club sounds, club interactions, it was a result of TikTok's proliferation of culture on the internet during the pandemic. There you go. That concludes. I didn't know how long this podcast was going to be. It's decidedly long at this point. The long COVID effects on the music industry. What did you think? Do you think that I'm right? Please tell me if you think I'm wrong. I would love your feedback on it. But I think that, you know, let me check back on this in 10 years' time. Let's see if a lot of this is come true. A lot of this is, you know, if many things have suffered. I also think many artists have succeeded. Last point to my point about it killing a lot of momentum, I think that any artist that knows how to exist online and can build a community, you have succeeded and accelerated after 2020. So, you know, it's spawned a lot of new artists as well. It's not all bad news. None of this is all bad news, but it's definitely like changed a lot of things. Thank you for listening. Now we get on to the appendix. First appendix is the boring one. Thank you for your patience around ads and this channel. As you know, I am working very hard on all my content to work to a point where I can make this into a full-time career. People are surprised that it isn't for me yet, but it's not because I have made a rule not to take any money off promoting music, and I got a lot of offers to promote music for labels around the world that could easily pay for my income, but that's my whole integrity. So when I was accepted for monetization on YouTube, little milestone, yay, and also for my podcast, I was like, great, I can start to earn some money off this. Someone on my Discord said, hey, the ads on YouTube kind of break up the flow. And I'm like, oh, let me look into it. And I thought, well, you know, if it's an ad every 15 minutes, you know, I'm sorry, that's not too bad. I look at it, it's like 20 ads in an hour. I'm sorry about that. I really, truly am. I left two in there, I think, because like, I do want to turn this into something that sustains. And we have Turntable Lab. We have, you know, things developing. I do sponsored posts. But, you know, as you know, with a business, it's like, well, yeah, I do want to monetize so I can provide more content and do it more full time. 20 ads is too much. So if you're listening to this and you're this deep in, if you give me constructive feedback because you care, please tell me. I just set ads live. I did not check how many. I didn't even know you could check how many until after I was told. I did not know that it was going to be that many. Jeez. Insane. So thank you for alerting me to that, and I apologize. Secondly, if you made it right to the end, my event All Together Now at Ace Hotel Sydney happened this week. It was great because I was very self-conscious to back myself in a physical space. I'm not a typical DJ that just plays in clubs and then builds a network around that. And so I've created my own thing. And thank you to Sophie and Ace Hotel for giving me the opportunity to use your space to trial something out. And a whole lot of you said hello. I also got DM saying I was too shy to say hello, so I didn't, which is a shame. But then also, like, you know, DJs, you don't usually just come up and say hello. And I learned a lot. And what I learned is that I'm going to evolve it for round two because I've set up an expectation with you guys that I've built a relationship with you guys, that I like talking to you online, I like talking to you directly. And then DJing is just a part of, and tastemaking is just a part of what I do. And if you just come and I just say nothing and play music, it's like, was that satisfying enough for you? For some people, it was. No one said it was unsatisfactory. But a lot of people wanted to talk to me. And I was like, whoops. How am I meant to mix, select songs, and talk to you? Impossible. So something had to give, and that's usually the mixing. So I think that I will build in more time to spend more time with you and make it more of a communal thing than in just like watch me DJ, because it's unless you're there for a rave and a dance, music cannot be the entire function, as I've learned. So thank you for your patience. I'm iterating and developing this because I want to take it all around the world and I want you to be part of that journey. So thank you all for coming. So many people said I love the podcast, which is wild to me because I don't know who listens to the podcast, and it's harder to get feedback on podcasts. So for people to say that, thank you so much. It's meant a lot. And the ability for you guys to like reference certain things in the podcast is like, whoa, you actually listen quite deeply. Shout out to you. You know who you are. The people that just came up and said hello. Anyway, that has been Derek G Speaks Volumes. Why have I started at 20 minutes an episode and now going on to an hour? Am I just rambling? Thank you for listening. Speak to you next week. Good episode next week. Bye for now.